Film Vault. Yes, indeed, it's the Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. Matt Anderson.
Hey,
I'm Ryan Bishop. We are your hosts for today. Top five firings. Top five firing scenes.
Uh-huh.
Scenes where a guy gets gal gets canned.
That's right. You got any gals on there getting fired?
That's a good question, actually. Do I? I don't.
You know why? Because they don't belong in the workplace to begin with.
So they never should have even. Actually, I kind of do. Kind of.
I have none.
Kind of.
I have zip. Bitty-doo-da.
Really?
And also, like, my window is pretty small. I got a small window for this one. I can't help
in terms of era.
I can't help it if, like, pretty much all of my firings happen in cinema within the same seven, you know, window span. I didn't write the movies.
I got a pretty good distribution going on.
This is a fun kind of list, though, because this is the kind of list, and I say this every now and again, where I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about top five firings, you know what I mean?
But they are rife.
But then when you go through and you start doing research, it's like movies that you haven't thought about in years. Yeah. And I had no idea what my list was going to look like. I came up with three on my own, and all three of those fell off one of the also-rans by the time I started doing my research.
I had a few that came up right away, and I was like, oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Nope, didn't make the list.
Can I also say that, okay, so we're doing this a day before
because
there's probably going to be at least one. Doing this 24 hours earlier than we were originally going to, or around 20 hours earlier, 21 and a half hours, that doesn't matter. I don't know about you, but I pick away my research. You know, like I'll spend a half hour.
I budget my time. I realize how many days there are left, and I'm like, okay, I got a little bit here, a little bit there.
So I had done, I don't know, probably about an hour's worth of research, and then when I found out today, oh shit, we got to do the show tonight. I had to pack it all in while Atticus, my boy, was playing or napping, and I got to tell you, like, you don't realize how much you put into the research for this here program, depending on the topic, obviously, until things like this happen, where you got to pack it all into one day. For the most part,
you're 100% right.
I'd done about 10%.
Yep.
Before today, and 90% today,
and it shows.
It's I still got the same list I would have had. I still spent the same amount of time. It's just I had to pack it all into one day, and I feel like there's just too much.
There's a lot, and I did the thing that always.
I'm saying is, I need an assistant to do my research for me.
Okay, I like this idea. I'll be your assistant if you can be mine. Yes, good.
I don't like that because then the picks would
conquers nothing.
The picks would be transverse, then I'd be embarrassed every week. Inversed.
I did the thing. Transposed. I did the thing that I often do when I'm ever so slightly light on research. Clips. Clips.
Oh, yeah,
clips.
There will be clips.
We got clips.
I got some clips. I got one that's like hefty, too. It's like a minute. It's pushing a minute plus.
Mine could be.
As far as clips go, it's an epic clip.
I wonder how much. I guess some lengthy clips.
Can I just correct myself right there?
Yeah, almost a minute.
I'm not correct myself, but be clear about something. I used the word epic appropriately, and I wasn't doing it in the whole epic fail.
Like epic
and
fail.
I realized about myself? I spend a lot of time not saying things, trying not to seem like I'm trying to be cool, which is kind of like a double negative thing. But I'm so worried about saying something that I normally wouldn't say.
Like you're going to actually slip into something.
Like I'm trying, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to fit into anything. So I will never say, I will never call basketball ball. Let's see if you can ball, kid. I'll never say that. Right.
What was your list?
I'll never say, dude, that's fucking epic, bro. I will never say that.
You had a list of phrases. It was years ago, but it was like, my bad.
Oh, yeah, it still works. Yeah. My wife just used one on me the other day.
My bad.
No worries. It's all good. My bad. You rock right on. All five of those are fucking awful, and I say none of them. Okay.
And you've said them all many times. And then succession.
In mocking
succession.
It's all good. No worries.
No worries.
When I hate when people say, I had a waiter the other day, and I'm like, here you go. He's like, no worries. I was like, that doesn't work there. Yeah. I'm not worried. I wouldn't think you would be worried about me handing you the check back.
That is the very slippery slope of these of any saying that's mindless is you start to say them when they don't apply.
Mm-hmm. They don't. Yeah, it just becomes part of your lexicon. It becomes your comma. Anything, I guess, is better than fucking because I hate when people are like fucking.
More culture.
You know what's a big one? And I hear it athletes say it all the time. I heard this one poor kid the other day, and he said it probably nine times in like a 60-second interview. I'm not going to lie. Why would you lie?
Yeah.
I didn't think you were going to say it. Now I'm starting to think
you mentioned it nine times.
Maybe you're not a very honest person because you're constantly telling me how you're not going to do that.
Now my radar's up.
Hey, we need to talk about films. I feel like we've done enough off-roading here for this entire episode. Let's get right to it. But before we do, I announced last week that I was very excited to have up to five new cities to announce for the Groupers
tour. I'm on the edge of my seat.
I have zero because of scheduling conflicts and contracts still have not been signed. I do have more details about San Francisco, though.
Okay.
I have only a very few of the San Francisco ones that I'm selling myself. The rest are going to be through Eventbrite, and that'll be coming up made public very soon, and I'll let you know where you can find all that. It's always going to be at groupersthemovie.com, groupersthemovie.com.
Dueling pianos? Or?
But yeah, piano fight. In San Francisco, August 4th. It's a Saturday, and it's in San Francisco. I know a ton of you are out there that supported the project.
Weather should be lovely that time
and,
of year.
It's gonna be nice. It's good. So in the city, Saturday night.
Oh, make a night out of it, Bay Area.
5 p.m. to 7 p.m. But the ones that I'm selling, and I only have like a handful left. They're $75. You get in an hour early. Mm. I'm gonna show a couple of the shorts. Cult of Corona will be one of them, and you also get a new updated. Cold Cockle Productions shirt. When I say updated, I mean it's a different color. It's gonna be the black and the green. It's gonna be
tour exclusive tour merch.
Tour merch. Exactly, okay. Brian. So you get one of those. I get your size up front, and then I have it for you in a little bag with your name on it at the time of the show. So $75 gets you the early entry, and you get
at the very least you get drunk with Anderson. I guess you can put that out. You knocked that on your bedpost.
We will be getting drunk. Yes. That's right. Yes. So cool. So that's that you get in at 4 p.m. for my tickets, and I only have like a handful because that's just going to be exclusive, very small group of people. And then more dates, hopefully next week. I'm getting really close to locking some things down. Mm. Really close and excited. Yes.
Dying.
So you're gonna be able to make the one, right?
Which one?
Because you haven't
the
seen
one?
Yeah, the first one, the L.A. one.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm going to make it minimum one.
Okay.
Minimum.
Okay. Well, let's not get crazy. I mean, maybe one. Okay.
Maximum one, too.
Let's flick fast the films that we've seen. Confess the films that we've seen since the last
time
we've seen.
What's the latest on Groupers? Give us a status update in 30 seconds or less.
EDLs, AAF files, and what else? What other files? XML files I'm dealing with because of it's going well. I have a total picture lock, absolute picture lock, and Noise Floor. My buddy Corey over at Noise Floor is doing a bang up job. He's got a great team in Chicago, and I'm actually I'm on this platform where I can see the work that they're doing. Ooh. And make comments, and we communicate back and forth.
That's
it's really nice. Yeah, it's an IO, so I think it's in beta. The system that we're using, it's fantastic though. So they're dialogue editing right now, and then he's going to start sweetening the sound and doing all sorts of fun actual editing. They're cleaning up the dialogue. So I got that going on. I've been doing spotting sessions with my composer, Rick, which takes hours and hours and hours, but we're through 2/3 of the film now.
Sweet.
And yeah, it's all coming together. This is the fun part, but it's also the sweat and bullets part because there's so much to be done yet.
You're under the wire.
I have a deadline.
Under the gun.
I have a deadline. Yeah, I got to get the DCP. There's a bunch of shit that you learn about when you're making films, and it's stuff that you don't really need and don't want to know about, but yet you end up having to be technically savvy with a lot of these things because that's part of the gig. I hate it. I hate it. I'd say about 90% of what goes into making a movie is the technical dull shit. 10% is creative and great.
Interesting.
About 90% when it comes, about 90%. Especially if you're new to it and it's like it's really holding you up, you'll spend maybe 80-20.
Right. And that's quite a ratio.
A lot. There's a lot of technical shit that you have to fucking deal with from the beginning. Just from getting final draft to the editing software to work properly with those goddamn updates where the end doesn't work all of a sudden.
Any top five ideas arising out of the post-production process? You're like, oh, this would make a good, I don't know, whatever, dialogue or
this
sound
show
or music.
This show is far from my mind when I'm dealing with all that stuff. It's almost like I'm wearing a different hat and a different personality. I'm like a different person over there.
What if you actually took off one hat and put on the other when you went to
I'm sure people do that, and I'm sure they're wacky and zany people. I bet they're from the 70s, too.
It's all good.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Right on. Hey, speaking of other topics, in firings, I came up with a few others in my research.
Logan, listening?
Write these down. Top five rants.
That's good.
Not fucking bad.
Not bad.
Top five sales scenes. Selling shit.
Not bad.
A lot of that.
Top five convincing sales pitches.
Yeah.
Sales pitches.
Not bad. Rants and sales pitches. Not bad.
I like that.
All right, let's flick fast. It's going to be a little thin from my end because I only have two and neither one of them are really like scream from the rooftops good.
I am kind of, I'm going to work my way up, but I'm going to start with a movie that apparently comes out the day you hear this, Friday. It's not on Just Watch. I can't find detailed information on the release, but I was told by a reputable source that this comes out on Friday.
The No movie.
Huh?
The Gnome movie?
No, Sherlock this is Gnome? A very small release. It is called Midnight Return.
I was joking about the Sherlock Gnome. Now, let me ask you this next question. Which of your friends has something
nope,
to do with
nope,
this?
No friends at all. No one I know. I saw this because this director is going to be on the Corolla show between now and the time Film Vault comes out.
You
want to
make sure you can get in there. And
well, I wanted to see it so I can ask some interesting questions because I was interested in the subject because Midnight Return is about Billy Hayes. Remember Billy Hayes?
Oh, of course. Oh, I got Billy's. Billy. I got Billy's number.
Did you?
We could call him up right now.
I'm going to see him tomorrow.
I booked him on a show years ago, and we chatted for quite a bit.
That's
very
crazy.
Interesting guy.
I'm going to see him tomorrow. He is the star of Midnight Return. This is Billy Hayes is the real life inspiration behind Midnight Express, the famous movie.
He's the guy who actually got taken down, had to spend time in a Turkish prison, and then they made the film about him.
That's right. The Alan Parker film, written by Oliver Stone, Midnight Express, was about Billy Hayes.
Infamous film.
Billy Hayes is the subject of Midnight Return, a documentary directed by Sally Sussman Marina. This is her debut. She's the one I'm fascinated to talk to because she is mostly, from what I can tell, a writer of daytime soap operas.
Mm-hmm.
So and she made a very interesting documentary. I did not know, you may have been a little more aware of this given the fact that you were closer to the release in age, but Midnight Express was,
I feel like that's a dig.
You're very old. Midnight Express was a very
not
controversial, very controversial film. Mm-hmm. It was number one, scared a lot of people from traveling overseas and specifically to Turkey, but also like, devastated the Turkish
tourism
industry.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, because they tried
to Dr. Oz trying to bring it back now.
And they're talking to the movie about
how smell the smells
the
of
Turks,
Turkey.
The Turks tried to have the film banned all over Europe, all over English-speaking countries. And
I love when they
know
do that.
It.
It's like, just be smart and just ignore it and hope it goes away.
Well, this is an early example of how that didn't work, you know what I mean? Like, they tried and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. It became a phenomenon to the point where it was winning Oscars, nominated for multiple Oscars. Alan Parker went on to become a very successful director.
Mm-hmm.
And this talks about that. It talks about the real sort of story of Billy Hayes, how it's not exactly like it was
in the
movie.
Did it cover the actor who played him and who died of AIDS?
Brad, is it Smith?
Not Renfro.
No.
It's different Brad.
I didn't write it down. It's Brad
something. Does it cover him?
It briefly doesn't talk about him. It doesn't talk about his death, though.
It's ironic that the guy that plays him died and the guy who actually it was him is still alive and around.
Once you look it up.
That's not my job.
Right. Yes, and it goes over all of the contemporaneous news reporting of the day. At one point, there's a news article that says, like, Billy Hayes just had the hassle of his life. That's the one way to put it, being caught in the Turkish prison, having to escape. It's quite a hassle. It talks about taking the film to Cannes, where it was actually...
Is it good?
It is good. I don't know that it's going to be super interesting to people who aren't into movies, but I assume by virtue of the fact that you are listening to this podcast, you are into movies, and thus you have seen or are interested in Midnight Express, in which case I think there's a lot for you to glean here. This is a very, at the very least, it's an interesting look at a movie phenomenon of 1970s, but also it sort of tracks his return to Turkey. He goes back at
one
point.
He does.
Very ballsy. Yeah. Like his lawyers.
He's a ballsy
like,
guy.
He's a ballsy guy, and he's an interesting guy. He's sort of not the first, but one of the first sort of archetypes of a reality star. Like, he was famous for being famous. You know what I mean? He was infamous.
And in the limelight.
Well, no, he was a celebrity in America. He went on talk shows. He went on Tom Snyder.
For being infamous. I mean, he wasn't famous for talent.
You're right. Okay, we can agree on that. What I'm saying,
famous for getting arrested.
And what I'm saying is he never went on to have a career or a job of anything. Like, he was professionally Billy Hayes.
Well, got to figure out does this documentary cover like how he's been making a living all these years?
Yes. Nowadays, I don't know about
smuggling hash.
I think there were some lean years because you do get a glimpse of his apartment.
Not smuggling hash?
Not after that. But he was smuggling hash for years before
that. I know that because that's...
But the movie made it seem like it was his first time. Whereas this, like, Billy Hayes is like, nah, I smuggled a lot of hash. But to that point, you get a glimpse in his apartment at one point, and he has one of those very cheap radiators that's like on a lot of apartment walls, and it's like, Billy is doing so well. Well, at least not that point. And it's at that point he decides to go to Turkey, like Billy Hayes' big return, and there's a very telling moment where they're on the plane, and the person with the camera is like, you know, it's a little tiny handheld camera, and they're like, what's your biggest fear? You know, being, you know, rearrested.
They find this hash in my ass.
And he says,
my biggest
fear is that I show up and no one cares. His biggest fear is relevancy.
That's pretty open.
It's pretty open and it's pretty telling. I mean, Billy Hayes is professionally Billy Hayes.
Right. You know what you should do? And this is probably a good move. You should get a drop of the cable guy clip of Billy.
That's right.
Billy, no.
They showed a lot of that stuff too.
And what, from the actual movie?
They showed Cable Guy. They showed Cable Guy. They showed Airplane. You ever been to a Turkish prison?
Right.
All the cultural touchstones.
You should get that clip and just play it throughout the entire time he's on.
Okay, you think it's a good idea?
I think it's probably good.
Okay, well, I normally steal your drops, but I guess I can come up with
that. That's my idea. I'd be on brand with you because you're stealing my idea that I'm giving to you. I guess it's not stealing if I gifted it to you, but yeah, just keep playing it. Like, that's the kind of thing I would have done if I didn't care about Midnight Express and didn't care about him back in the day when I was a total fucking punk. I would do shit like that. Like, the singer for Smash Mouth, like, right. he wanted
Steve,
to kill me
Steve Harwell.
Very badly.
He's a big man.
He kept talking about his new single, and every time he'd bring it up, I would play Somebody Once. And I saw how angry he was getting, and
he had to keep poking.
He's like, oh, I had to. I must have played that thing probably, I don't know, 12 times, 13 times. Every time he'd bring up the new one, and he's like, I don't know what your sound guy's doing. You think you're funny, man? He was starting to come out and kick my ass. Like, there was no fun for him. Like,
he's quick to the fight. Like, I've seen home video footage of him at county fairs playing, like, you know, somebody wins. Like, people heckle him and they like want to fight them from the stage.
Like, he was so annoyed that that's what he's known as, is like the Shrek guy.
That's right. Hey, now.
So he kept trying to sell this new album and this new record, and every time he would bring it up, it was great. Because the song starts with such a punch. That's Somebody. Right. Okay. I watched a film. I was assigned a film.
Midnight Return is all about... By the way, Alan Parker, still alive. He hasn't directed a film in like 15 years.
He's very old. Brad Davis is the guy's name.
He's in the film.
I have not said Brad Davis is the guy who plays him. Thank you. And Midnight Returns is not a I don't enjoy that title.
Midnight
that title
Return.
Is something that's gonna get lost in the weeds quite easily. Midnight Return. Like, you'll remember this movie maybe like 6 months from now. And
I didn't love it, but there were moments. And if you're into movies, this is something you probably want to check.
I was assigned a film, Brian. Oh, yeah. In some odd. What? I still don't get it. I still am waiting for the other shoe to drop there. Mm. Where Brian, he won the gambling bit last week, and he assigned me a film that I've been meaning to see for quite some time called S is for Stanley. S is for Stanley, 2015.
The fact you're doing it first doesn't make you feel good.
Directed.
You usually go worst to first.
No, I'm just doing this because I'm assuming you saw it, and I want to do one together.
I didn't see it. What? I assigned it to you. So you often... what? You often tell me I'm the canary in the coal mine, and you're my canary. This is a film I thought you'd sink your teeth into. This is a Jolly Rancher.
S is for Stanley, directed
Jolly Rancher
by a man named Alex Infasili. Infasili. All right, so here's a story. Here's the gist of it. It's streaming on Fuckflix right now. If you'd like to see it, there is a man named Emilio. And he's an Italian man, and the director of this here documentary finds out that he hears through the town folk that Emilio lives up the street still. And he's got like a little shack, and he's got a bunch of Kubrick memorabilia. So he's like, I must talk to this Emilio fella. And he goes, and in fact, Emilio lives there. He's a little Italian man, and he does have a bunch of Kubrick memorabilia from the years, 30 years or so, that he spent working as essentially Kubrick's assistant. And he proceeds to shoot a documentary of Emilio in his garage with all these boxes and things involving Kubrick's films and things that he's picked up or that he picked up over the years. And he interviews this guy. Now, the movie is a scant, 80 minutes, I think.
It's not
even
pretty short.
It's not even 90. However, and I am a giant Kubrick file, as you know. I love the man.
That's right.
And I was found myself many times, not bored, but just like, this is what you got?
Oh.
It's Emilio sitting on a stool in a garage telling stories, and not all of them are flattering, as you'd imagine, because Kubrick is known as like a perfectionist.
It's prickly.
And he's a control freak to the umpteenth degree. So some of the early stories, what they did with the...
Is he at least an engaging storyteller?
Yeah, he's a cute little guy. He's the kind of guy that you wish you had as a grandfather or an uncle or something, you know? Or
both my grandfathers are dead, so
you'd imagine, so much. You'd imagine going over to Italy, and this is the kind of guy, fellow you'd like to meet. It starts off with Emilio telling the prickly stories, and about painting Kubrick not in the... I was watching it. It's hard for me to watch this objectively, obviously, because I hold the genius that is Kubrick so close to my heart. And
did you transfer the license plate to the new car?
I didn't.
Oh.
I did not like how they were kind of painting Kubrick in this documentary. So what you get is a lot of...
What if it's painting him as like a sham artist who stole all of his ideas?
That'd be
really, really bad.
And untrue. They're painting them. So they start off, he's telling stories about how, like, when he first went into his house and there was just all these, like, notes, like, on the doors in his house for his wife and his daughters. Like, if you turn it on, turn it off. If you, like, the annoying dad that you might have had, like, a friend's dad who you might have, like, hated. He was like, that's how they're painting them, right? If you open it, close it. If you dirty it up, clean it up. Like, these are notes that he had all over his fucking, almost like the teacher hated.
That's very Corolla-esque. Like, he has a cup that he writes on, like, please return cup, or please turn upside down, or whatever the thing is.
So there's that. Then he moves on to about how Emilio is talking now, and he's talking about how his life was, his dream was to work in Formula One, right?
Right.
And he wanted to race in Formula One, and he was an amateur racer, and that was kind of interesting. That's how Kubrick first came across Emilio. Was he was working on A Clockwork Orange, Kubrick was, and they needed remember the big phallus art piece that the cat lady takes in the jaw?
Yeah, it's her demise.
It's in England now, and it's snowing very badly, and they need this. Like, they didn't get to the root of why they didn't have that piece, but it needed to be transported across town to the set, and no one was going to do it, and lo and behold, this little Italian dude named Emilio shows up, and I guess the penis was sticking out the side window. That was the only way to get it in the car because he was driving a small car. That just makes for a fun image, a visual. But Kubrick took note of that, as he took note of every fucking thing. And he's like, you know what? I want to meet this driver, whoever was the only one that was willing to come out in the snow, in the sleet and the snow, and deliver me my penis. So he ended up meeting him and essentially willing him into a job. Emilio, really sweet guy, really nice guy, didn't have much intestinal fortitude as far as what he wanted in his own life. He was easily swayed into becoming Kubrick's bitch.
All right.
And seemed to have some ill will about it.
This is not shaping up to be a flattering portrait.
So what they did with the arc, I realized, was, you know, it started off with this, and I knew where I was going to end up, and, you know, by the time it's over, Emilio's crying, talking about Kubrick's last days.
They forged a relationship.
And, there's a lot of very interesting insight about Kubrick. I would have liked a little more of what was in the boxes.
How much
maybe
of it
some
was
more
new
compelling
to you?
Stories.
How much of it was
a lot of it. There's a lot of new stuff in there. Well, the part that I disliked the most, and it was kind of makes sense, but it's a little bit shocking and upsetting, was this is towards the end now.
He talked about AI was his greatest.
Yeah, he goes on to talk about how actually Kubrick didn't die when everyone thinks he did. Mm. He actually died after AI. He finished AI. No, you fuck. He took him up to, he was working on Eyes Wide Shut, and he took him up to the, there was a lot of that, like, where Kubrick's just calling all hours of the night, and they were going over all the notes that Kubrick would give him, like, just monotonous shit that he had to do. He was a secretary, essentially. But towards the end now, right, it's probably 98, and it's the one day off of shooting Eyes Wide Shut. Mm-hmm. Like, they were shooting 6 days, and the Sunday, I think, was a day off, but not Kubrick. He had to go out, and he was hunting for a location, which was, it's hard to believe that he would still be hunting for a location in the middle of production.
You think so.
But that's the story that Emilio is telling. So they find this this manor that they went to that they ended up using for the orgy scene, right? And there are some fun stories with Emilio as well, talking about dealing with Jack Nicholson. He didn't like to deal with Jack Nicholson because Jack Nicholson was an American going after, like, you know, young girls and stuff. Emilio was a very salt of the earth kind of guy, right? So
it's rubbed me the wrong way.
They take Kubrick and him go to this manor, and they're taking pictures. Kubrick gets out of the car, and it's very cold. And Emilio's like his mother almost. Like, it's too cold for you, Stanley. You should not go outside. It's too cold. And Kubrick's like, no, I have to take pictures and you know, make sure that this is the right look, make sure the light's right. And they're showing these stills. And as I'm looking at these stills, I've seen a ton of stills that Kubrick's done. Mm. They're all phenomenal. Like, Kubrick would not be pleased with these stills that he took
of
the manor.
Getting out.
And it has a little timestamp on it, right? So I'm looking at the timestamp, and I realize, and he's having Emilio drive towards the manor, and he's taking these stills like you do. And I'm realizing that these stills, these pictures that he's taking, are over an hour long. He's out there taking pictures as the sun is, you know, going away, like the light's fading, and they're all shitty pictures, real bad pictures. And then Emilio finally says, "All right, Kubrick, Stanley, it's too much. Get into the car. It's very cold." And he said his beard was white with frost.
Right.
And Kubrick asked him. Stanley asked him, like, what have I been doing? And it
was
suggesting that there's some dementia going on there. And I did not ever hear that before. And I don't know if I really like that. And I really don't like them showing his pictures. And
This makes you kind of want to see Eyes Wide Shut.
The idea that, you know, maybe that isn't his film when everything's said and done. You know, by the time it was actually finished, maybe, you know, Warner Brothers put their stank on. I don't
know. Someone else kind of took over.
I've seen it three times. I don't know if I have no idea if I like it or not. I have no idea. So it is an odd one. But I thank you for having me watch it. I would actually like to be able to watch it again, but I can't really recommend it to people because I think most people would not really get, kind of like with Ice Guardians. Like I was really into that documentary
it's
about
kind of one of those. Where if it's up your alley, you know
the NHL enforcer. Yeah, yeah. And if you're not a big NHL hockey guy, I don't think you're really going to enjoy that. But S is for Stanley for you Kubrick files out there. I still haven't even seen Kubrick's Boxes, which is a whole another thing that came out a number Kubrick's of years ago now. But yeah, there's just I get leery. I'm worried when I go into these documentaries. I don't want them to paint. I you know, I hold them in such high esteem, and I almost take it personally when
when they take a not so flattering.
But course. Emilio absolutely loved him. There was definitely a love affair. Kubrick absolutely loved him as well. Like there's touching stuff where Emilio's son gets
how old
an accident.
Is he at this point?
He's an older dude, but you know, Italians and living the Italian lifestyle, you know, you age gracefully.
That's right. You're like a fine wine.
So as for Stanley, if you dare, I say that in jest, is on Netflix. Fuckflix. It's on Fuckflix. There.
I similarly saw a documentary about a profile of a Jewish man. A Jewish man made lovingly by someone who he mentored.
This is not my next pick. So
okay, good. I saw premiering on HBO this week.
What are you doing?
What?
Look at you trying to get the jump in the scoop.
Get the jump. Well, I happen to see a couple movies ahead of time, and now I'm seeing this. I'm talking about this one the week comes out. The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
Mm.
Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling,
Gary.
Directed by Judd Apatow. I did not realize a lot of things. Number one, well, let me start at the very beginning. We'll just say this. Judd Apatow did not realize he was like mentored by Gary Shandling. He was like a young man who Gary took under his wing and was almost went from like an assistant to like a writer to like his writer to up and up and up.
You ever have a mentor?
Various sort of mentor figures, but nothing like this.
I am absolutely mentorless.
Yeah, not a traditional mentor.
I've never met anyone that I might consider a mentor. I've never met in the flesh.
I've been lucky enough that
I would like to have a mentor.
I've had people who've given me good advice, but never like, you know, take me under your wing.
I've just been yelled at.
Could you make the argument that Carolla is my mentor?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, then there you go. But he's also the kind of guy, and you know this even from working with him, he's not the kind of guy who's going to proactively tell you advice. Like, here's what you do. It's going to be, watch, like, shut your mouth and, you know, watch and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're digressing. Does Gary Shandling. I don't know how much you know about Gary Shandling.
He bought Reggie ribs.
At Loveline?
Yeah, Reggie, our old security guard. He had a story that he told us, and he was at a rib place, and he was buying ribs, and it cost like $42, and Gary Shandling bought them for him. That's the only inside scoop I got
on. That's awfully nice. I didn't know
Gary.
That. I didn't know.
And Carano's got some great Gary Shandling stories.
Oh, well, you should probably see this. I am outside of the demographic for Gary Shandling for a couple of reasons. Number one, a little too young. I was a little too young.
You're really selling your youth on this episode. What is this all about?
I was a fresh-faced young
boy.
What's
going on?
No, I was too young for his. He had a show on Showtime called It's Gary Shandling Show, and then he had the Larry Sanders Show, which everyone knows, but I was a little too young for both of those. And I didn't have HBO or Showtime, so he was way off my radar. Gary Shandling was this guy I was like aware of, but I never saw any Gary Shandling. And they also talk about in the documentary how he was with Jay Leno, one of the fill-in hosts for Johnny Carson. Like it was the Tonight Show came down to him or Jay Leno, or of course David Letterman. But you know, he was one of the fill-in hosts, and that's something the show I didn't watch. I was 10 years old, so I never watched that show. So he's way off my radar.
Okay.
And I'm had my eyes opened to what a sweet guy he was. This is a passion project for Judd Apatow. He buys ribs, buys sweet baby back ribs for a sweet guy.
Yeah.
Judd Apatow is a passion project. He loves Gary Shandling, and it really comes through. There's some home video footage that you know, Judd's holding the camera, and Gary's like, Judd, come over here and get this. Come over here and get this. And he's talking to his wife about, oh, Judd's coming over after blah, blah, blah. Like they're actual friends in addition to being, I don't know, coworkers, whatever you want to call it, employer, employee. This benefits a lot, the documentary does. Remember the Kurt Cobain documentary, Montage of Heck?
Mm-hmm.
It was like all diaries. It was illustrated diaries.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Shandling kept a very detailed diary. So that is put to great use in this. It would not be half the movie, literally half the movie without it.
Okay.
What?
Go ahead.
All right.
Go ahead.
That's all. Gary
is it good?
It is good. It's made very lovingly. And if it's a little long, it's two parts. It's like 4 hours.
Jeez.
You can forgive it because the guy had a pretty monumental career for comedy. And it's made by someone who genuinely loves him. If you're like me and you don't know anything about Gary Shandling, but you want to know like why do comics love him so much? Why do people who know comedy love him so much? This is going to open your eyes to a lot of stuff. So The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling is on HBO starting this week.
Yeah, and it's one of those. Good. I know nothing about it other than what I just kind of heard from you. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those passion projects that you said, and it would only exist if everything lined up, which is they had Judd wanting to make this, and they're not going to say no to Judd.
Exactly. Imagine his assistant was any other person,
yeah,
or his little coworker, employee, whatever you want to call it, mentee was any other person, but Judd Apatow was like, he can call a shot.
Wait, so he was his assistant?
It was kind of a meant. He worked his way up. He started off like, okay, like literally.
But what I'm saying is like HBO. This is not going to get them money. You know, mm-hmm. This is not something that they're going to use to their advantage. It's just like they're letting one of their people make a passion project. Yeah. So you should support it or check it out or be happy that it exists just for that reason.
Exactly.
I mean? Kind of like The Wire. The Wire wasn't supposed to go beyond season two if you just look at ratings. But HBO is like, we believe in this film, this show, this product, this program, and we're going to continue it.
Indeed.
Gotta love HBO when they do things like that.
And also, Gary Shandling was one of the first big HBO stars.
But a two-parter, like Frank Sinatra gets a two-parter.
Yeah, like I said, it's a little long, but I can forgive it because
that's what I'm saying.
It's made so lovingly.
It's a love letter.
You can see the passion in it.
It's a love letter.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw a film. I saw this film a while ago, so please do forgive me because one of the problems with having to do the show 23 hours before 21 and a half.
You gotta dig through the archives.
Yeah, I'm like I have not. And now a number of listeners have been telling me to watch this one, so this is nice because now everyone will know that I've seen One of Us, Brian. It's a movie about the Jews. A movie about the Hasidic Jews. Mm. Now, this is a documentary. It's streaming on the old Fuckflix over there, so everyone can enjoy. I saw it a number of weeks ago, maybe a few months ago now, and I wasn't hot to try to talk about it just because it felt me. It left me feeling.
Yes.
I felt like the filmmakers were treading lightly.
Why is it called One of Us? What's the premise here?
So, it's directed by a team, Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady. And Rachel Grady, she did a little film called Jesus Camp.
I love that movie.
So this is a nice companion piece to Jesus Camp.
That's a great movie.
This is covering the Hasidic Jew population, namely in New York.
Sure.
But,
there are a lot out here in L.A.
Yeah, I lived in Fairfax District. So it was a very odd neighborhood where it was crack addicts, would-be actors, people going to... Price is Right that we're in front of town because the Price is Right is right there,
right.
And Hasidic Jews,
yes.
And me.
It was
very odd.
It was an odd storm soup. We used
to
live at Olympic and La Cienega. This is very local, but yes, lots of Jews in all black walking.
I love it. It's
walking
like
endlessly. A lot of chuppahs.
You know what I think of the chuppahs
that got put up?
Yeah,
little tents with the palm leaves. Not the tents. The what do you call it?
For sukkah.
Is it a sukkah or is it chuppahs for a wedding?
Holiday.
Yeah.
It's the fatwa, I think.
No, you're right. It's a sukkah because the chuppahs for a wedding, and the sukkah is the little. What's
the sheet they bang through?
The pop-up thing that they put up for like tailgates.
Here's the beauty is no one's going to be listening to it. It's a pop-up tent. No one's going to be, no Hasidic Jews are going to be listening to this anyways because they're not allowed to.
They're not Amish.
No, but they don't deal with technology. So
that's true.
So it follows three ex-Hasidic Jews who got out for various reasons. They got the curly Q.
Pay us.
And it reminded me a lot of The Devil's Backbone in The Devil's Playground. Sorry, where they Rumspringer, where they leave,
which supposedly wasn't exactly entirely legitimate.
Yeah. It was legit.
The movie was like staged somehow.
Nah,
yeah, you told
me that. No, I didn't not tell you that. It's a fantastic documentary. It's up for best documentary a number of years ago. That covers the Amish kids who they leave.
So we're off topic.
They leave. But this is very similar to that because it's talking these three subjects who, for various reasons, decided to get out of the Hasidic faith. And I, what I was starting to say earlier is like, I love, and I still see them. Actually, they're in my neighborhood that I live in now. You see them on Saturdays, the Sabbath. Mm. You don't roll on the Sabbath, Brian.
No,
you ever, have you ever had one of them ask, like, try to ask you to turn off their heater or something on a hot day?
No, oh, but I know that happens.
It's happened to me a couple times. Yeah. And they're not allowed to actually ask you.
But they
so
cheat.
They have to, like, find ways to ask you.
Yeah, there's all these, there's 650. Here's
one of them. One of them just walked me in and showed me the thermostat. And I'm
here's
like,
the inherent problem with, yeah, because they don't speak, they usually speak Yiddish.
Do you believe it? God so much, or are you trying to cheat God?
They're not allowed to.
God is omniscient.
A Gentile for help.
Here's the deal: there's 600 and some odd different rules that they have to. And I didn't learn that from this documentary. I knew this from like religious studies that I took in college. And the Jewish religion is fascinating. And I wanted to know get more of that from this documentary. Right. Instead, they skirted a lot of stuff, and I felt like they were. It felt to me as I was watching it that they were concerned about being anti-Semitic or too negative, because there is some hardcore cult-like shit that's going down in this documentary, with abuse happening within marriages, children being stolen from families, and there's even a scene where her ex-husband's Hasidic family comes to her like apartment, is smashing on the door, and she calls the police. That's in the trailer.
She's not allowed to use a phone.
She's ex.
I understand. All right. Oh, and okay.
So these directors spent 3 years following these three individuals who left the sect, I guess what I call it. And I can also understand why they might have had a hard time penetrating deeper, because they're women, and I don't know if the Hasidic Jews are going to be real open to, like, you know, doing interviews, A, on camera, a piece of technology, and two, women are behind it. You know what I mean? Because there is that whole thing. Like, I also know that if they're on their period, but this last time we talked, I just don't want to get the fucking hate mail. I just want to go through.
Is it a fact or is it not?
It's a fact as far as I know.
Okay.
That, like, just if you're on your period, you got to be in a separate room.
Say evidently.
You can't sleep. Mm. Evidently. Mm. In the same room, there's that.
You know what? They get some things right.
The After Disaster years ago, the After Disaster, I talked about a story that I heard in the news that was a real thing that I did not know about, but apparently, you know, the Moyle, like he does the circumcision over there, like some sects, S-E-C-T-S, are so old school that they actually do it with their teeth.
Yeah, don't they consume it or something?
And I don't know about the consumption, but there were newborns getting the old herps over there, and I found that disturbing, so of course I brought it to the After Disaster, and oh, some angry Jews came at me.
Really?
Yeah. I'm accusing the filmmakers of doing, and I'm trying to skirt things because I'm just I don't want to get
you sound hate. Like a scared white man.
It doesn't take much.
Scared, guilty white
but
man.
But it's been a couple months since I've seen this, and it's not one of those ones that really stuck with me. I wanted more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
But they gave it, I mean, 3 years they spent on the ground, I guess.
I said that's a lot of access.
And there's some obviously very heartbreaking things about families breaking up.
Yeah, because you're excommunicated, essentially, if not just from
they're,
your
Yeah,
community,
they're absolutely
but
excommunicated. But what I was starting to say was when I see, I will use the Hasidic Jews as an example because that's what we're talking about. It just reminds me of what this country was like founded on and what it's supposed to be, and like how all these different cultures,
slavery and avoiding taxes.
Cultures can come here that were persecuted, or a lot of time they're on the run, but they can come here and they can live whatever, you know, under pretty much whatever ideals that they like to live, and wear the hats and wear the garb and live in their own, like, there's tons of shots in this documentary, like in the middle of like Manhattan and in parts of New York, where they look like they're completely from the other side of the world, but they're living harmoniously in the United States. In their own little bubble, and it's fine. You can do that here.
Yeah.
Like whatever you're into, you can do it as long as it doesn't involve like, you know, anything illegal.
Yep.
So, I wish that the it was a little more satisfying. I guess
I'm with you. It's on Netflix. You said
it's on the old fuck mix, yeah.
It's short, at least. Yeah, do you remember? I mean, do you have an impression?
Hour 35.
That's too much.
Way too fucking long. No, that's 135.
Coming up next. We will count down the top five
one of us
firings. People who are no longer one of us, if you work at that company.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
You're out. What to do with myself now that she's
not here with me? Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize, I guess it makes sense.
Much.
I don't realize much. World. One of the many things I did not realize, people still wear cologne, men specifically wear cologne.
I wear Stetson daily.
Do you really?
You wouldn't know it because you see me.
I would. Well, I thought, I usually see you at night. So maybe it wore off.
I do when I and it's been a long time, but I wore that Jupe quite a bit.
What is Jupe?
Jupe. It doesn't smell like any other cologne. It's like sweet. Ooh, it's nice.
I used to dab Aramis on once in a while, but that's a younger man.
Jupe is what I think you're supposed to say.
Younger man.
Jupe. Most cologne smells like eucalyptus. Don't like that eucalyptus. I don't like that.
I don't mind, but it all kind of smells cologne-y. Anyway, someone bought cologne through our link, which made me think of it. Someone bought some Acqua Di Gio.
Cologne.
6.7 ounces. And also a 1.7 ounce, presumably for traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's under 2 ounces.
I would imagine, yeah.
Other things purchased on the Amazon banner.
You know what? Cologne's one of those things that I wish that I wore. Because you just put it on, you feel better.
It's kind of like a watch. Like a nice watch. Like it was part of your ensemble, right?
Yeah. I need to get back into that cologne.
All right, let's get
the
some cologne.
The wife's going to just let's assume I'm cheating on her, but I need that cologne.
Someone got 6 Platinum Tools wire strippers.
Oh, you know what that
6
is.
6 wire strippers. What do you think? Groomsmen gifts?
I think the groomsmen gifts, yeah. Are they engraved?
Simply Safe Wireless Home Security was purchased, as well as a 2-pack of high-performance Class 10 memory cards from Lexar. Scepter 27-inch Ultra 4K LED monitor was purchased, as well as Corsair Platinum Mechanical Gaming Keyboard. What is this here? Someone updated their GPS. Someone got the latest Mazda 2017 Navigation SD card for their GPS. A Lilliput 7-inch screen camera field monitor for the mirrorless camera, DSLR. SKB shallow roto rack. Oh, this is for hauling like musical gear. It's like one of those heavy boxes, clamshell type things. You know, transporting all sorts of electronic equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon Music Unlimited for family was purchased. An Acer G6 27-inch full HD widescreen monitor. A Samsung 2.1 channel.
They call Pelican.
Pelican, that's what I said. Yeah. Clamshell? Pelican.
They are kind of clamshell-esque, but I think that's the brand a lot of them are, is Pelican.
Soundbar was purchased, the Samsung Soundbar.
Makes sense, because Pelican's, you know,
a 2ELK low-profile keyboard. Brooks England all-weather bike saddle. What is this here? Oh, a Brother drum cartridge, Brother high-yield toner, and Canon toner for select Image Runner copiers. Gun Hazard. That is apparently a soundtrack to some sort of game. Logan, you know what that is? Gun Hazard. You ever heard of Gun Hazard? It was a foreign purchase, so enjoy. Thank you for getting it through us. Sexy Hair, sulfate-free smoothing shampoo and conditioner.
Ryan, you can't click through your own stuff.
I know. It's one of those like aspirational.
It's actually true. We're not allowed to click through
it's
our
true.
Own
It's true. Small rig cage for Panasonic Lumix camera. A Logitech advanced wireless trackball for Windows PC. A plug-in carbon monoxide alarm, a Kirkland signature quit smoking gum, and a 1-year PlayStation Plus membership.
Any idea of how close he came to the hitting the post last
Pretty
week?
Sure right Pretty sure it's right on. Pretty sure it's right on. Pretty sure I nailed it.
No, I don't remember.
Pretty sure it was really close.
You remember it as well as I remember
one short.
Of us.
I think it was a little short. He went a little short.
Doesn't sound like me.
Here are the movies that were clicked. This is the last time I saw you. We got a little two people. Got Thor Ragnarok. Not a bad purchase there. People seem to like
fun
that.
Fun movie.
People seem to enjoy that. Hey, Steven Spielberg presents Freakazoid Seasons 1 and 2. Steven Spielberg presents Pinky, Elmira, and the Brain.
Steven Spielberg presents a lot.
Complete series. Yeah, you know what he doesn't present? A little 3 o'clock high. Took his name right off that because he was embarrassed.
That's right.
How dare you, Speely? How dare you? 3 o'clock high is so fucking good.
Buddy Revell.
Hobbit was clicked through as well as the Battle of Five Armies Extended Edition. How can you get longer?
I was going to say.
Peter Jackson, like somebody dared him. Somebody dared him.
He runs the credits twice.
E.T. the Extraterrestrial. I just watched the second half of E.T. the other day and it's old.
Yeah? Does it hold up?
I love it. I still love it, but that fucking...
Did
creature.
You watch it with the boy?
I watched it with the wife. She had never seen it.
I was, wow.
I know. Shocking. I know. Murder on the Orient Express. Blue Planet 2. Fuck to the yes. Fuck to the yes on the Blue Planet 2. My stupid DVR. It did not get the complete series.
Oh,
so I'm
going
to have to,
upsetting.
I'm gonna have to buy. Passion of Joan of Arc. The Passion of Joan of Arc. Probably want to hear more about Joan of Arc these days.
Yeah. Original strong woman.
3 people got Shape
Maybe
of Water.
The original.
3 people got the Fish Stickless Man movie. Appreciate you guys clicking through. Why though? Why? I got a similar question.
Oh, it was Amazon Instant Video.
To Murder on the Orient Express. Why?
Amazon Instant Video.
Why?
Instant Video.
Instant Video?
Yeah, so you can stream it.
So But why? Still,
we should be saying thank you for renting it.
Thank you.
Us.
Yeah, but why? Yeah, I guess you got it through The Shape of Water.
It's the best picture one.
But here's a question: why Murder on the Orient Express? Why?
I am curious.
Hey, you know what? I don't have to ask why. Two people got patty cakes. Patty cakes.
Patty cakes.
Love that patty cakes.
Fun movie.
Hey, The Mummy, the original 1959. The Mummy. Hey, you might as well. American Movie was clicked through. Fuck to the yes on the American Movie. Fuck to the yes. Tyler Perry. Why did I get married?
Coven.
I got another question there.
Coven.
Why did you get Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married? The Big Lebowski was clicked through as well. Thor, John Nemanek. Johnny Nemanek. Mnemonic?
Remember that Keanu Reeves movie?
Dude, yeah, bro. It's all good.
It's all good.
Star Wars was clicked through as well. The Star Wars The Last Jedi, the most recent one. Is that advanced sales or is it already available?
It's got to be available to watch, right?
Does it have to be? Came out like Christmas time.
Yes, because you saw a little before.
The whole experience of movies just being, you better see it while it's in the theater or else you got to wait years. It's just gone.
It's just not that good of a movie.
It's so depressing when like the movie is like it's giant deal, and if you get to see it a week before anyone, like you feel like you're special or something, and then like it seems like 2 weeks later you're in line at the fucking supermarket. It's like $9.99 on the checkout stand when you're as a little like, hey, in case you're trying to buy one last thing.
I think I'm supposed to have the opposite opinion as someone who's into movies, but I don't understand people who freak out about seeing a movie like a premiere or something a few days before. It's like, realize in a few days, we're all going to have the opportunity to see this.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. Like if you get to, I like to see movies, especially the big movies, like if you can see them like a full month beforehand and then wait and kind of figure out like what if people are going to like it.
A month
any buzz.
Who sees a month beforehand?
A lot of the screeners that I get, they're like 6 weeks before and then they actually expire like 4 weeks before they even come out. It's like, hey, what are you doing? Like, yeah. I
need to see this like a week ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly. So I find myself asking for new screener links all the time. But yeah, it's nice to get in before all the critics are actually in there trying to sway people's opinions. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. All right. But back to the show. Hi, I'm Dave Chappelle. This is The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Hey, welcome back. Time to count down some firing scenes. I'm excited for the clips, Anderson. The clips are...
there's clips?
Clips are lit.
What?
They're lit.
See, like, that's something I want to say.
Tight.
The clips are super tight. All
tight's right, good, but lit's not.
How many... lit's terrible. How many clips you got there?
Three.
I got four.
Ooh. What about crossover? This is what I'm worried about.
There could be some crossover. We'll see.
You said yours are from a narrow range. What range are we talking about? So I know the crossover.
All right. As old as 89 and as recent as 96. 7 years.
We might not have much crossover.
I'm down with the no crossover.
We're going to have one, at least one.
Number five for me. Oh, actually, go ahead. Okay.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have no clip.
I have no clip either.
Okay. Number five for me is actually, so these are all scenes, all firing scenes. But number five is
as
the only
opposed
one,
to what, a firing movie? That'd be a
well,
weird fucking
movie.
Well,
it's funny you mention that because number five for me is a multiple number of scenes in the same movie, Up in the Air. Up in the Air, which is an underrated movie. I liked Up in the Air quite a bit.
It's not underrated. It's overrated.
You think it's overrated?
Yeah.
I love this movie.
It's an okay movie. No. But it was up for like Best Picture, I think.
It was
people
a really good movie.
Fucking went nutballs over it. And I always, this is a movie that I use as an example of a strong ending really doing something for a movie. And this has a great fucking ending. His little monologue that he gives in the end.
I think there are great moments throughout. This to me is an almost awesome movie. I give it 4 stars. I can't quite give it 5.
It's all right.
It's very memorable.
It's good. It's good. It's solid, but it's overrated.
I like it a lot more than you, obviously.
Well, it's a Brian-like movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'll take it. It's really well written. It's sharp, sharp.
It's like Juno.
Characters.
It's a lot like Juno.
Well, it's the same director.
Yes.
Jason Reitman. Mm-hmm. Up in the Air has firing scenes throughout. The whole premise is that George Clooney is a professional firer. Mm-hmm. He's a consultant who goes to different companies and lays off workers. And he's got it down to an art. He's really, really good at it. But then here comes young Anna Kendrick, and she is sort of the new recruit. She's hot. She's hot on the case. You know what I mean?
Update
the old ways.
You don't refer to the women.
And she wants to streamline the process, and the company wants to start firing people via video conference. So there are
personable,
brutal firing scenes in here. Some of them heartless. That the old man fired literally through by video conference. There's some awkward scenes. Zach Galifianakis getting fired is very awkward. Tragic, of course, the woman who alludes to throwing herself off a bridge. Mm-hmm. And some are just painfully sad, like the one with J.K. Simmons, where he's this guy who should be getting ready for retirement, and instead they're letting him go. He's like, well, what the fuck do I do now? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 55 years old. Mm-hmm. Anyway. And it was the right place, the right time. This is like right around the same time as like the financial crisis of a few years ago.
It'd be the right place, right time, right now.
It would be. It struck at just the right time.
I don't think that we came up with this topic because of anything happening in the news. I think it just happens to have. Yeah, like it's coincidental. But there are a lot of obviously firings going on.
It was a listener suggestion. I should have looked that up.
The poor guy that got fired right before his retirement kicked in there.
Oh, that's right. There's I did not think of that. That did not occur to me, actually.
But yeah, we're not being clever or cute here going, look at us being politically
active,
savvy.
Yeah, knowledgeable.
I don't even know what's happening.
Up in the air, number five. Multiple scenes throughout.
Not bad.
Multiple
kind
scenes.
Kind of a cop out.
How is it a cop out?
Since you didn't have one in particular, I guess the J.K. Simmons.
I think the J.K. Simmons one is the most memorable, but even the one with
the only one that I didn't review for this list.
The poor woman was, you know, she was just so.
She's like, I know exactly what I'm going to do. It's a very nice bridge.
That's right. It's a very nice bridge in my house. I'm going to throw myself off it. And then the old guy who was like, who was torn between rage and sadness, and he's so impotently like frustrated at just being fired over a computer. Like you can tell he's just the kind of guy who doesn't even know computers that well. And then the reveal that he's in the next room. Oh my God, heartbreaking. Such a great scene. Remember he's in the next room, they can hear him like shifting his chair.
Okay, maybe I like it a little bit more than that.
That's a good scene.
But the whole like smoking in the stairwell.
The only part I didn't like was the part with his sister and Danny McBride. That was a little bit
Number five for me. Ben gets let go, and it's real, real sad.
Ben.
Everyone knows the staple scenes of leaving Las Vegas. Nicolas Cage won him his Oscar, 1995. Mike Figgis.
That's right.
Mike Figgis directed it. But
this is another thing about this list is I'm going to learn through I could have been researching this forever. You know, I'm gonna be like, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot about that one.
I'm hoping that I get a couple that it didn't even occur to me from you, but. I'm not going to hold my breath. You know what I'm saying?
Son of a bitch.
Oh, I love you, Ben. All right. So, Ben, played by Nicolas Cage, he works for, I don't even know, it's some kind of entertainment movie sales, making.
Yeah, what is it? What does he do?
He's acquiring. An advertising, isn't he? And, no, it's he's got a bunch of scripts.
Oh, he's a Hollywood guy.
Hollywood guy. And he's doing little zany. Nicolas Cage style, you know, this scene he's talking into the wrong end of the phone, and he's obviously having somewhat of a nervous breakdown. But you can't watch it as a Cage fan and not think that this is just Cage kind of doing a weird thing. But then when he gets called into the office to be let go, and it's because he's unraveling and perhaps he's got a drinking problem and he's just not stable and he's just not doing the production or the company any good anymore. Mm. He has to be let go by this guy. He looks a lot like Ed Harris, who lets him go. And
I remember that.
It's. Cage almost got the Oscar just from this one scene. It was so well sad. He gets fired. He realizes it's happening, and he just doesn't fight back at all. And he has this one little line. It gives me little chills just thinking about it. And he's like on the verge of tears, and it cuts back to him. And because like he gets a severance check, and he looks at it, and then we go back to Ed Helms, Ed Harris looking guy, right? And then we go back to Cage, and he's like on the verge of tears, and he just goes, "I'm sorry," like. He realizes he's completely fucked up, and he's like a little like 8-year-old boy just saying I'm sorry, and it brings tears to your eyes. And that was, you know, the catalyst for what comes next, which is the rest of the movie of him trying to drink himself to death until Elizabeth Shue with a cape comes in and saves him.
Now you love Nick Cage. How many times have you seen this movie?
Once.
I was gonna say,
and once a bunch of I've seen chunks. Of,
yeah, I've
plenty
seen
of chunks
here and there, but one of those ones that is such a.
It's just not a fun movie.
It's not a fun movie, and we did a list years ago that was top five good movies
speaking
you never want to see again.
Of movie, yeah, this is definitely on that list. Speaking of,
we should redo that for our Patreon.
Seen movies before they came out. This was back when I was such a hardcore Cage fan that I actually somehow I don't even know how I did it because it was before the internet back then. This movie came out in, what did I say, 1995? I went to a early screening of this at what used to be the Lemley Theaters. For those of you outside of L.A., it doesn't matter, but it's right there in Sunset and Crescent Heights, which is where that great fucking scene from Barfly takes place, where the douchebag is in the convertible, and he starts making out, and the light turns green, and then Bukowski's like hitting his horn, and the fucking guy gives him the finger, and then the light turns red, and then he starts pushing his car into the intersection. It's right there. Yeah. That's where the movie theater used to be, and then it becomes Sundance, and now it's AMC. Doesn't matter. God damn it, I'm like Mr. Facts.
You're all over the place, man.
But I saw an early screening of this with Mike Figgis doing he did a little like a moderation, right. And he was talking about his film, and Nick Cage was there. I was sitting right behind Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was writing, small little theater too, and it was half full. It was fucking bizarre. I went out front afterwards to have a cigarette, lit Patricia Arquette's cigarette. Oh, it was a fantastic evening.
What a night.
Nick Cage was up there. I got to ask him a question.
You know who's not happy right now? Who's Movie Emporium? Is it Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Bob is not happy.
Bill,
right now.
Bill's not pleased with all these names.
A lot of names.
But man, that was one of my, because I live in LA. I've lived here my entire life. I never see famous people, especially famous people I care about. And that was like, who's who of who Anderson cares about? Minus Jim Carrey. But like Nick Cage and Patricia Arquette, both in one night. I got to ask Nick Cage a question.
What'd you ask him?
I asked him, because Guardian Tess was his next movie, and I asked him about Guardian Tess. If he was going to be like unhinged Cage or more reserved Cage. And I was so nervous when I asked him the question. His response was, what? And then I remember they're like, we have time for one more question. And someone's like, what's your favorite color? And I wanted to punch that person. And he's like, purple. And then they were just done. I remember it perfectly too. He said purple. There's probably like maybe 80 people in there. Oh, it's fantastic. But anyways, yeah, Nicolas Cage getting fired at the beginning of Leaving Las Vegas.
Number four.
So I lit her cigarette, Brian.
You did.
She looked me in the eye and said, thank you.
And I said, she'll never forget that.
No problem, sweet.
She's been like a misconnection. She's been looking for you ever since.
Hey, I've noticed she hasn't been in a ton of shit lately.
Who was that roguish, good-looking? Mm-hmm. I think it was a threesome.
You're saying that I look like that fucker? I used to get that a lot. Oh, I pissed that guy off, too, with drops. I had
Stephen Baldwin?
Yeah, because he was on a Christian chair, right. And I kept playing Kumbaya, even though it has nothing to do with it.
I think I was there that
He night. Was getting pissed.
I think I was there. Was that the night that he had someone walk on his back?
He was like only Lauren? On there one time.
Yeah, I think he had Lauren walk on his back.
I kept playing Kumbaya. I was like, yeah, something like that.
We are dropping a lot of names.
Sorry, Bill. All right, moving on.
Number four. Logan, there's a clip associated with this one. It is not good audio quality, but I had to include it because it includes the lines, you're not the boss of me. And also, it's hold on, wait. I want to fuck. It's my big dick. I'm talking about Dirk Diggler getting fired off the set.
The best
Jack
part of this
Horner.
Scene.
What's that?
Sorry, I stepped on you. By Jack Horner.
By Jack Horner.
Burt Reynolds. The best part of this entire scene for me by far, because it's an explosive, loud scene, but it's Philip Seymour Hoffman
in the background. Yes.
We could almost do a top five, but it's so visual of like little moments that happen in the background.
He's clutching his arm like the 8-year-old boy, like you said, like the Nick Cage.
Yeah.
He's clutching, like mommy and daddy are fighting.
And he didn't have to be
so
there
great.
At all, but it was just
so
perfect
great.
Placement.
So we're going to listen to a clip from Boogie Nights. This is Dirk Diggler quitting. This is also, so some might also encapsulate tropes. Like one great trope is the, you can't fire me, I quit. You know, that's been done in movies 100 times. This is a great example of, you know, Jack Horner is about to throw him off the set and fire him. And Dirk Diggler is like, you know what? You can't fire me, I quit. Let's hear the, admittedly poor audio quality, but you're going to get the idea.
You're not bossing me.
What?
Oh, you're the king, huh? Yes! Don't fucking touch me, Dirk! No, no, no! You shut up, too! You're not the mother of me, and you're not my boss! You're not my mother! You're not my fucking mom! Hey, no, I'm ready to shoot the scene. I want to shoot the scene. I'm fine.
I want you out of here.
Look, it's over, okay? I'm done.
Listen,
I'm ready to shoot it.
I want you.
Don't you fucking call me a kid. What the fuck? You want to see me kick some ass? I do fucking karate. You want to fire?
Get out of here.
You are
a melee ensues.
You're fired.
A melee ensues.
I'm the biggest star here, man. That's the way it is.
I'm the one with the big dick.
I want to fuck. It's my big dick. So everybody get ready. Fucking now. You know what? I don't need this shit. You know, fuck you, fuck you, fuck all of you. You're not my boss. You're not the king of me. I am the fucking king of Dirk. You're nothing without me, Jack. You're fucking nothing. Fuck Dirk, man. I don't need your shit. I'm so sorry, Jack.
Did you record that yourself?
No, it's the only one I could find
you
of that scene.
Some friends in your neighborhood to like get
the old
together.
YouTube there. Apologies for the poor audio.
Really? I saw it and it was
idea.
A beautiful quality.
What are we talking about?
I watched this clip earlier today.
You saw a good quality clip?
Very good quality.
I wish I could have seen it. I think there's a shorter one that exists, but I wanted the whole scene.
Yeah, it was very nice and short and succinct.
I wanted the whole damn scene.
Dirk, very, very good, Brad.
Thank you. Dirk. I'm very proud of that pick.
All right, so this was super obvious, and the firing was all right in Jerry Maguire. The firing was okay.
Yeah.
Right? It was the aftermath of the firing.
This is not a Ray Anderson pick.
But it becomes one a little bit. And he might call me...
don't know where this is.
We've all seen don't worry, I'm not gonna freak out. We've all seen it. Takes the fish and all that stuff. Mm. There's another scene in another movie. That's 1996. 1998, Jim Brewer does a very similar thing.
That's right, it does a parody.
And Half Baked, and it was an homage. I'm gonna call it an homage to Jerry Maguire. And I love that Jim Brewer. And any excuse to play a little Jim Brewer here on the program, we're gonna do it. So this is Jim Brewer doing an impersonation of my number four pick, which is Jerry Maguire being fired by
what's
his
he getting fired from in this movie?
Smarmy
Bob Sugar.
His understudy, Jay Moore, yes. And he gets fired, and then the next scene, the infamous scene, the famous scene, is when he goes back and he clears out his own office.
Who's
and
coming
he
with
leaves.
Me?
And but what we're going to hear here is Half Baked, because they're all trying to quit their jobs, but Jim Brewer gets fired from the record store that he works at before he has a chance to quit. And this is Half Baked, 1998, directed by Tamara Davis, by the way.
That's right, Tamara Davis.
She's good.
Yep.
I like her. She's a little Billy Madison.
Indeed.
Billy Madison over there. All right, so here we go. Here's Jim Brewer doing Jim Brewer. Man, this guy's got to be stoned in this scene. Love that Jim Brewer.
Don't worry. I'm not going to do what everyone thinks I'm going to do. Flip out,
man. He's even got a briefcase. Like, why would he have a briefcase?
All I want to know is who's coming with me? Who's coming, man? Who's coming with me? Huh? Who's coming with me, man?
I will.
And the lone lesbian. Jan. In the record
Thank
store.
You,
there we go. That's it.
Jan.
I think I will was the out cue there.
Yeah.
Hey, he just busted in a goat boy for
That's
a second
right.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
he's doing all of Jim Brewer's greatest hits.
My number four is little Jerry Maguire / Half Baked. Both of them firing sequences. Fantastic.
I like they went a little lesser known one.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Maguire was on the list of top five.
What was it?
Wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Maguire made the listener top five.
Yeah, it's
iconic.
But technically, it's not the firing scene.
Yeah,
it's the aftermath.
Scene the firing the restaurant scene between him and Bob Sugar.
It's unsettling. It's annoying. You want to like stomp, Sugar to death right there at the table. You would like to do that. You would like to do like the American History X to him and say, put your mouth on the table there. Bite the table. Oh, that'd be fun. A TGI Friday's death.
A curve stomp guy.
Death. Just another table stomp. You got to do
I guess
it would have to be a fixed booth, though. You know, it can't be one of these tables that just rocks over.
I guess it could be the on the bottom of the tables, on the floor, there's the four legs. You know what I mean?
You can just do the fucking booth table, Brian, if it's fixed. Mm. If it's actually got like a good pole
you get
with
the
some
torque,
foundation.
You get the proper support. Number three for me.
Did you even know that you could kill someone that way?
That was a very disturbing scene for a young Bob Ryan.
Had anyone like? Is that a thing that has happened in the world?
Logan, you're from the rough OC. Does that have people die?
It's like it must have happened.
How,
right?
How, what are you talking about?
The curb stomping in American History X.
Oh, I've never witnessed that.
Logan isn't capable.
Logan's twisted for life.
He's not much of a multitasker. He's in the middle. He was focused on whatever he was doing, so he didn't hear the conversation.
I definitely went to high school with some guys that could have been in that movie, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's something so simple, but I've never seen it since.
Yeah, it's surprising it didn't like take on a life of its own.
Well, I'm glad it didn't. I mean,
no, not the actual
act,
but in movies.
Can you imagine if there was just like that was like the new trend
that was like,
of killing
easy,
of murdering?
That would be like the new way to like, hey, guess what I learned? What? Let me show you.
Three hostages dead after being curb stomped to death via Tony X style. Wait, it's not Tony X. I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Derek Vineyard?
No, the guy that directed it. Tony.
Oh, Tony K.
Tony K.
That's weird you say Tony K style.
Yeah, like, because he's a
fringe figure in movie history.
I know, but he's responsible
yeah,
for that
right.
movie.
He's responsible for that movie.
I guess it'd be Ed Norton style.
Yes, number three. For me, a big movie, but the trope exists. Anderson firing by death. I'm gonna fire you, so I'm gonna kill you.
Mm.
I was like, it's often sort of the realm of supervillains, you know, Bond villains. You know, this is Dr. Evil. You know, with I'm very badly burned. You try to kill Mustafa
From, I have no idea what you're talking about.
You remember Will Ferrell in Austin Ferrell? Powers? Dr. Evil tried to kill Will Ferrell. He dropped him in the flames and presumably burned him to death. And then all of a sudden it's, can somebody help? I'm still alive, but I'm very badly burned.
Right, I kind of recall it's that, yes.
Anyway, well, that's how, a
what's
takeoff.
What's getting fired?
That's how he fired him? Super villains, super evil villains.
Like they open the trap door.
Will fire people, fire people by killing them.
Okay.
Such as one of the all-time great on screen, Darth Vader fires Admiral Piet in Empire Strikes Back. Let's hear Darth Vader giving Admiral Piet the bad news. Admiral Piet made the grave mistake, it turns out, of coming out of hyperspace too soon. And so they have to invade.
That is a pretty big difference.
They have to invade Hoth.
Look at the math.
Yeah, they have to invade Hoth by storm instead of a surprise attack. And so Vader explains in pretty curt language to Admiral Piet via video conference, by the way, that he is no longer needed.
Lord Vader, the fleet has moved out of light speed and we're preparing to...
Oh, can't breathe.
You have failed me for the last time, Admiral. Captain Piet.
Yes, my lord.
Make ready to land our troops beyond their energy field and deploy the fleet so that nothing gets off the system. You are in command now, Admiral Piet.
Thank you, Lord Vader.
I realize I just got it wrong. Admiral Piet was the guy he promoted in the wake of the death. I didn't write down the guy's name who we killed. But it comes... So,
doesn't Darth Vader is like how Black Panther should sound.
Well put. Admiral Piet. The Empire Strikes Back gets a lot of credit for being the best Star Wars movie for good reason, but...
Wait, what? What did you just say?
Gets a lot of credit for being the best Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, I thought you said Admiral Perret does.
I messed up and I went back and corrected myself. The Empire Strikes Back gets a lot of credit for good reason for being the best Star Wars movie. One of the best things about it is, so Lawrence Kasdan came on as a writer, a co-writer for this movie, and he interjected a lot of humor, and a humor that actually works, such as the part where Vader like kills people as they slowly fail him throughout the movie becomes a running gag, and it's pretty darn funny the way like others react, like, okay, that just happened, I guess I'm promoted, and it becomes sort of a running gag, which very funny, and that's how Darth Vader kills his subordinate in Empire Strikes Back. He fires
him. Same kind of combi. You can also blame that for being the cause of them trying to force that into the most recent episode, I guess I can call it, right? Movie.
Did they? It was in
there
Rogue
was a lot
One,
of force comedy.
In Rogue One. Oh, I thought you meant the actual choking part of it. Yes. The comedy also came very naturally in Empire Strikes Back, which became more forced.
Did we ever do top five breakups?
Yeah, we did big breakup scenes.
We did.
We did. We can update that one for the Patreon episode.
Mm-hmm. Not bad.
Not bad. Number three?
Number three for me. I'll be shocked if this is not on your list. This is fax machine firing, as well as video conference firing, which you've had a few.
This is not on my list.
The problem is that they didn't quite see the future as to what it was going to actually be. I'm talking about Back to the Future 2.
Oh, you mean in this specific
1989.
Scene? They got a lot of stuff right.
A lot of stuff very right. But as far as communication goes, if you recall right before this scene, she's his sister, the daughter is wearing some kind of, or his daughter is wearing some kind of like Oakley blades that are supposed to be like, I guess, Google Glass, kind of like that.
Glass, but
it's like
she's watching TV.
But it's like a phone call, right? But here's the problem: like there are her own glasses, she's wearing them, right? And the technology is such that you can get a phone call through your glasses, and then she goes, "Dad, it's for you."
Right.
Like
it's the home
like,
line.
Yeah, like it's the home line. Like it all goes to the same glasses, and whoever's wearing those glasses, like they didn't think, oh, maybe
everyone could have one.
And then we go to the really super futuristic, and it's fun because, you know, we're old enough to remember watching Back to the Future 2, thinking, wow, this is the future, and seeing him talk to Needles, played by Flea. Right. We're seeing the older Marty McFly in this alternate future talk to his cohort.
His loser buddy. His co-worker.
Not even his buddy. It's like a colleague at work, played by Flea from the Chili Peppers. Through this big screen TV, which by today's standards is like a moderately sized TV, I guess. And it seemed very, very futuristic, and it had the AT&T branding on there with the product placement.
And it had the multiple channels, which was also a predictor of the future. But he's like, give me channel 212, 731.
Which seemed crazy, but like now, dude, I was watching channel 659 before I came to the studio today. Right. Little Penguin Hockey there.
It's good.
Little Penguin Hockey. A little Root Sports. All right. So It's fucking AT&T Sports now. Look, full circle, AT&T. Full circle. Yeah, so and then so here's Needles. Well, actually, it's after Needles is off. Needles.
So Needles proposes like a scam.
A scheme,
right?
Yeah. Which I still don't quite understand. It has something to do with them. You know, it was loosely thought out, I guess. Right. It was just a plot point that he gets fired in the alternate future. And they wanted to show all these cool things. All his briefcase, Marty's briefcase, also has this little button you can push. So like a little card reader pops out of the briefcase. But here's my favorite part of all this. Now, of course, I guess it's mildly racist. Maybe Logan can weigh in, but it's an Asian boss that immediately picks up and fires him.
You're allowed to be Asian.
Yeah, but he has like a thick accent.
You're allowed to have a thick accent.
I think it's like Sony rules the world now type thing.
This is also the point in history where it was like, oh, the Japanese are going to own everything. The Japanese are on everything. They own America.
Well, that's true. China's now owning it.
But at the time, it was supposed to be Japan.
Well, they were. Oh, and now they're China's economy not doing so hot there. Not doing so. All right, so he gets fired. Here, let's listen to the clip. The best part is you will hear the final facts. We're the future with all this great technology, even though we all share the same glasses phones, apparently.
Limited great technology.
But also, faxes still sticking around. And,
are you wearing your own face on a T-shirt?
Yeah. Glasses still sticking around. It's a comfortable shirt and I never wear it. Get the fuck off my jock.
I'm
wearing an after disaster shirt because it was the only thing clean that I could find before I rolled over here last minute. I didn't know.
Do you want to borrow a T-shirt?
I was in pajamas all day. Get off my dick. All right. I'm wearing an after disaster shirt and it's a very comfortable shirt because every shirt that I make is very high quality. All right. So
Needles has just proposed a scheme.
It's all technology. But most people already know this that are listening. They're pulling their hair out. Let's just get to the fucking clip. But here's the comedy, the real comedy that they couldn't have seen back then. But faxes.
I like how after you say, let's just get to the fucking clip, you go on for another
I'm seconds. Catching back up, getting back on track. Faxes still very, very important in the future.
That's right.
Not only one is not good enough, two is not good enough. The man has three fax machines. What world do we need three fucking fax
machines?
Future
world. A dystopian future.
We know we need zero fax That's machines. Right. And here's the clip.
McFly!
Racist.
Fujitsu-san, konnichiwa!
He's a Japanese
McFly.
Man.
McFly! I was monitoring that scan you just interfaced. You are terminated!
It's like a fake Japanese accent, though.
No!
A white guy?
It wasn't my fault, sir! It was Needles! Needles was behind the whole thing!
And you cooperated!
No, I didn't! It was a sting operation! I was setting him up!
Read my facts!
No! Please! No, I cannot be fired! I'm fired! Ah!
Multiple faxes pour in.
And they say, you're fired. And the screen is blinking, you're fired.
That's right.
You know what? Yeah, you're out there. I just realized now, after watching this clip numerous times in the last 24 hours, the whole reason why they have the fax machines, they probably realize, they're smart enough to realize that fax machines can't be a thing of the future. They're not going to be sticking around then.
Especially with dot matrix printers.
That's true. Yeah,
I know. They could have. I feel like they were probably pretty close to thinking, hey, instead of a fax machine, maybe like it prints out like a block cube that says you're fired.
They had the rehydrating thing for the food.
I think it was just they were trying to, they had a funny little line there.
Yeah.
Read my facts instead of read my lips. I think that's where they're going off.
Because, right, the original George H.W. Bush had just had read my lips, the new taxes.
That was like, probably.
That was the 88 election. So it would have been the year before.
Perhaps.
Read my lips, the new taxes.
Not a bad pull if you're correct there, Brian. Not a bad pull.
I know for a fact it was the 88 election.
Stop it. Right. You might be right.
Because Michael Dukakis.
But it could have been written in 87. But they can always rewrite ads.
Probably write them until the day they shoot.
Okay. I'll give it to you. Are we taking a break here?
Taking a break. Coming back with our top two firings. More clips next. I'm begging you, relay. No ads this week, guys. Instead, we'll just do a quick mention of our Patreon. It's going fantastic, actually exceeding our expectations. So thank you guys, everyone
who pledged. I
don't know
what your expectations were, but...
Everyone who signed up and is giving us $5 a month to get the bonus content. You get a bonus top five once a month. You get bonus spoiler editions as they come up. Mm-hmm. We just did... Annihilation. I was getting so confused. Tickled.
And we did Tickled last week.
And the top fives only stay for 90 days. This time, at the end of this month, let's see, the 2009 Vaulties, the last Vaulties we never did as before we started the podcast, is going away.
That's going away,
the best. If you want to get into the best films of 2008, now's the time. Mm-hmm. And thanks also to the people who pledged more than it's $5 a month if you want all the bonus content. Some people, for whatever reason, we appreciate it, pledge more than $5. Some people pledge 10. There's one guy who guy or girl who pledges $5.01. A few people in between.
Some people pledge less than $5. Don't even get anything for it.
That's just nice
that they're supporting us.
Well, that's awfully nice. If that's you, thank you. We very much appreciate just the generous donation. If you want to up your donation by a dollar or whatever it is, you can get all the wonderful bonus content. Maybe you don't even realize what you're missing out on.
And as we get, the numbers continue to go in the appropriate ways, the more gusto we have for it, and the more ideas that we have. Like, we're going to be doing a new sniff track soon just for the Patreon people. It's fantastic. I love it. I love doing it, going back to our roots and doing it just for a really small group of hardcore listeners.
Indeed.
And those shows have a little bit of a different flavor to them, too.
They definitely do. A little freer.
A little drunker.
As the night goes on. So thanks, you guys, for subscribing. If you want to, the Patreon page can be found at Patreon, of course, or a link at AndersonandBrian.com. And now back to the old show. Welcome back. It's time to count down our top two firing scenes of all time.
You want me to go first? Good? You feel strong about your top two?
I think we're going to cross over with one of these because it fits into your era. Actually,
there's a chance that it eluded me. I hate when that happens. You know my least favorite thing that's happening on Twitter, because now that I'm back on I know what tweet is. I figured it out. It's people saying, hey, Brian, thanks a lot for patty cakes.
You're welcome.
Can't believe Anderson didn't know about this.
Get that drop, by the way.
Horrible. I'm doing the voice, so no one will take me seriously. Hey, Brian.
You're welcome. I believe I was the one who brought to the show.
I brought us the program.
I believe I was
on our Sundance episode.
I was the one who signed it to you.
And then you saw it before I did, and that I'm shamed.
Shamed.
All right, go ahead. What's your number two?
Number two. Tell me Casino's on your list.
Nope.
No!
Because I do Casino, I don't hold it in high regard.
But the scene is so great.
It's a pretty good scene.
It's a great scene. So this is the trope of the boss just unloading.
The whole movie is a Scorsese trope. That's my problem.
Yeah, it is. But this one is the trope of the boss unloading on the underling. Just let him have it. It's had it coming for a long time. Joe Bob Briggs plays Don Ward, and Don Ward is the floor manager of the casino, and Ace Rothstein is, the casino boss, and he is furious that Don did not pick up on the fact that not one, but three slot machines hit jackpots, and he's going to explain how upset he is, and this is the end of a very long, dressing down, in public, by the way, on the casino floor, in front of everyone. Ace Rothstein's going to let Don Ward go right here.
Ward, you're pissing me off. Now you're insulting my intelligence. What do you think, I'm a fucking idiot? You know goddamn well somebody had to get into those machines and set those fucking reels. The probability on one four-reel machine is 1.5 to 1. On three machines in a row, it's in the billions. It cannot happen. Would not happen. You fucking Momo, what's the matter with you?
Momo.
Didn't you see you being set up on a second win?
I really
you,
think
wait,
you're...
Wait, you didn't see that you were being set up on a second win?
I really think you're overreacting.
Listen,
this
you
whole...
fucking yokel, I had it with you. I've been carrying your ass in this place ever since I got here. Get your ass and get your things and get out of here.
You're firing me?
I'm firing you. No, I'm not firing. I'm firing you.
You might regret this, Mr. Rothstein.
I'll regret it even more if I keep you on.
This is not the way to treat people.
Listen, if you didn't know you'd be a scam, you're too fucking dumb to keep this job. If you did know you were in on it, either way, you're out. Get out. Go on. Let's go.
That's good.
Right,
it's
better right there. Nothing there.
Either way, you're out.
De Niro.
It's like an umpire.
Yeah,
he had loads on him. He had to come for so long.
My problem with Casino is it is just Scorsese out Scorsese-ing himself, and it's just kind of, it felt a little bit masturbatory to me.
He's doing all the Scorsese things.
All the Scorsese, he had already done them all perfectly with Goodfellas, and this was just more of the same. I know I'm supposed to like it, but like when that, where she throws the chips in the air, and it's like a 3D shot, but it's not, and it's, I'm supposed to love it, but I just,
what if
what
if they re-release it in 3D?
I would hate that even more.
I'd go see
that. You probably would.
I would love it.
What if he fires him in 3D? His smoking cigarette.
Oh, he's so angry. Oh, the blueberries are coming out at me. The blueberries.
All right. I'm glad it's on our list.
Yeah.
Glad it's on a list.
I wanted it mostly for the clip.
All right, here, this is iconic. This was actually number one. It was buying back and forth. I couldn't decide what to put. Number one, number two, number one, number two, number one, number
two. My number was pretty sweet. I don't have a clip, by the way.
My number one's pretty fucking sweet. And I got a very long clip.
Okay.
But number two, there's also a clip for this one. Brian, the rub here is he can't kill him.
Oh, yes.
He's employed by
my number one.
talking about RoboCop 1987, directed by Paul Verhoeven. Excellent. This is your number one?
I'm number one.
Let's do it. Let's play the clip. Do you have no clip?
No clip, but I will set
how
it
would
up.
How do you not have a clip?
Because it was so visual. And I was
it lends itself to clips.
Okay, good. I'm glad because, and also it's a little bit of a spoiler, so I was afraid you were going to get on me for that. But let me just say, since Anderson brought it up.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Like, well, if you don't want RoboCop.
Here's the thing. The movie is so B-movie, so cheesy. It's not the kind of movie that lives and dies by plot.
It's also not the kind of ending that you can't see coming. Like, spoiler alerts, fast forward, you don't want to know, but the evil guy gets killed by the hero at the end. And how it happens is very ingenious because RoboCop has directives. He's part man, part machine. And one of his directives is do no harm to Omnicorp.
Do no harm.
Do not harm an employee of Omni Consumer Products. And
his maker.
Dick Jones, the man who made him, is an underling there at OCP. And so he takes the old man. Well, he's like a senior VP or whatever. He's not the boss.
He's in the fucking conference room.
He's in the boardroom. You're right about that. But the old man, is all they call him, is the old man. He's the CEO. And Dick Jones, when faced with annihilation, takes him hostage. And he's like,
Dick Jones aspires to be the old man.
Yes, he wants to be in charge.
Yeah, and he's trying to do so with like his Ed 209
and
prototypes.
Now RoboCop's got the gun trained on him, but he can't pull the trigger because he's an employee of OCP.
He's a robot.
That's right.
He's half robot. That's so right. What happens?
His directive is cannot harm the
boy. I believe this clip picks up soon after Murphy, I should say, barges the scene, bangs the door open, and walks in on this boardroom meeting, which Dick Jones is heading. Here we go.
Now it's time to erase that mistake. I want a chopper, now! We will walk to the roof very calmly. I will board the chopper with my hostage. Anybody tries to stop me, the old geezer gets it. Dick, you're fired!
Thank you.
Now, the best part of this entire clip.
There's two great parts.
There's a couple. But the Colin Powell looking guy.
Yeah, the black dude.
The black dude who couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
Before that, though, like then when they were cutting the inserts of him going over to the Colin Powell looking guy. Right. He was just so excited, and like he was like a kid in a candy shop.
Whoa. That is a running theme throughout this movie, is how like pornographically, especially with the OCP employees, like their pornographic approach to violence. Like oh boy. So yeah, he gives the thumbs up at the end. That was so great.
It's an absurd movie, but it still holds up.
The other great part is when he shoots him a number of times. I would say close to a dozen times with a high powered rifle, or excuse me, a firearm, and he still is screaming all the way down. That man should be dead. But he is still screaming all the way down as he falls.
Maybe they missed all the vital arteries.
That's a really good point.
It's possible.
He blew that guy away.
He did. He has a machine gun, handheld machine gun.
It is quite the firearm.
It is quite the firearm. Yeah, but it's just fun. I think most everyone who listens to this garbage, they're familiar with RoboCop, and it's a great firing scene. And All right. So
you're going right to your number one, because that was my number one. The old man fires Dick Jones.
My number one. You do? And you ready to do it? All right, this is a movie that I don't give enough credit to. I do like this movie a lot, but I like the whole what was happening back and forth between Wyatt Earp and Tombstone. What was that?
Sorry, alert.
Because if you recall, Wyatt Earp and Tombstone were both like coming out at the same time. They used to do that a lot more back in the day.
Yeah.
The studios would both get
competing projects,
a similar idea, or they'd find out that the other one's doing it. And they don't do that nearly as much as they used to. But it definitely happened here with Wyatt Earp being not really mentioned or looked at for years and years.
History
by the studio.
Kind of Wyatt Earp.
By the studio. And then all of a sudden, there's two in the same year. But Tombstone, you know, everyone remembers I'll Be Your Huckabee and all that stuff. But there's some really, really good writing here. Let me pull up my notes here real quick because I went back to the other thing.
This is from Tombstone? Is your number one?
Yeah.
Oh, so is this
Kurt Russell, Wyatt Earp, calls out Johnny Tyler, played by Billy Bob Thornton.
That's right.
And he walks into the saloon, right? And they got a very loudmouth, obnoxious dealer dealing cards over there.
He's abusive.
Abusive, very abusive. I found this in my research, and I would have never, you know, even thought of this one. But after watching
it's a young, fat Billy Bob Thornton
a number of times, I just love the fucking writing. So this is written by Kevin Jarre, who the man knows how to write dialogue for like westerns. However, Rambo First Blood, right? This is Kevin Jarre, the guy that wrote Tombstone. Dead or Alive, TV movie. Glory, screenplay. This makes me want to watch Glory because I have not seen Glory.
You never seen Glory?
No, it's ridiculous.
Oh, hold on.
The Devil's Own, screenplay. And then The Mummy. These are his credits. And the man hasn't worked. I don't know if he's alive or dead. What's going on? How he could listen to the fucking lyrical nature of the back and forth.
Yeah, this is great.
With this, this here scene. This is Kurt Russell given the business to Billy Bob Thornton, and let it play. It's a little over a minute, but it's just some beautiful dialogue, and it's so much fun.
Something on your mind?
Just want to let you know you're sitting in my chair.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, it's a fact.
Well, for a man that don't go heeled, you run your mouth kind of reckless, don't you?
No need to go heeled to get the bulge on a tub like you.
Is that a fact?
Hmm. That's a fact.
Well, I'm real scared.
Damn right you're scared. I can see that in your eyes.
All right, man.
Go ahead. Skin it.
Yeah.
Skin that smoke wagon. That's and so see good. What happens.
So good.
Listen, mister, I'm getting awful tired of your...
I'm getting tired of your guests. Now jerk that pistol and go to work.
Jerk that pistol.
I said throw down, boy.
He's bleeding of the mouth now. Open hand slaps.
You gonna do something or just stand there and bleed?
Billy Bob. Terror. No. Terror in his eyes.
I didn't think so.
Here, Mel.
Takes his gun out of his holster, throws to the bartender, tosses it. Without even looking.
Hang it over the bar. All right, youngster, out you go.
By the ear.
By the ear.
By the ear.
Ultra cool guy. Just ultra cool guy.
That's a boss. I knew this was familiar. I knew this sounded familiar. I'd done research for this. This was by number 3. We did top 5 bars. The Oriental is the number 3.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
That's right.
Okay.
I'm saying it's a great scene. I agree with you.
I was about to say something. I can't remember.
The Oriental.
Brian. Just because it's what it's called.
Like I feel like I want to bathe in it.
I feel like you don't have to continue to celebrate to say that. And the heel. The heel first. I didn't even know what they were talking about. I had to watch it a few times. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the butt end of the gun, I'm assuming. Like, you know, and it's like easily exposed so you can draw it quicker. I think that's what they're talking about. You know, there's go heel first.
There's a lot
there's
of...
so much. It's almost Clockwork Orange.
There's a lot of colloquialisms in here in this movie. There's a really well-written movie. It doesn't get enough credit. Number one, it is really era correct. Like, they got a lot of details about the characters correct. Mm-hmm. Number two, like the Huckleberry thing, they kept calling Doc Holliday a lunger. Hey, lunger. And I didn't know what that meant. That means he has tuberculosis. He's like, he's
TB, I would imagine, to do with the lung.
He's constantly coughing up blood.
Yeah, so
this movie really gets a lot of the lingo correct.
And that's why I wanted to bring up the writer's name, which I don't do often enough on this here program. He's also co-director with the guy that directed Rambo First Blood.
George Cosmatos? Is that the guy?
George P. Cosmatos, yes.
Cosmatos.
And Kevin Jarre.
Could be Cosmatos. I think it's Cosmatos.
Who knows? Uncredited Kevin Jarre. But the writing here, just the skin.
I guess that is technically a firing scene. Good call.
So good. Oh, he's absolutely getting fired. What Dwight Earp is doing is he wants a job. He wants to...
wants to run the Oriental.
I feel like I didn't really set it up right, but he was looking for a job.
He's
he went
in
over
town.
And he realized that the bartender had a problematic dealer, so he went and he did... just decided to fire the dealer because
it's a really great character establishing scene because White Earp is new in town. He's known as White Earp, the gunslinger, you know, from the Wild West. He's like, I want to settle down and we get a job. He sees a cool looking bar, the Oriental. It's a grand bar. Like, it's a grand establishment. He goes over there and it's empty.
They got a problematic employee.
The old time bartender just in there. No one's in the place.
Except for like eight or ten people.
It's a couple guys, drunks, playing cards or whatever. And he's like, hey, it's a cool looking place. What's the problem? He's like, dealer scares everyone off. He's like, well, I'll take care of that.
Yeah. And he does.
Great scene.
He does.
Great scene.
I would have never guessed that would be number one on my list. That's why I like these kind of lists. Because, once you dig deep, you find these movies that you haven't thought about in years or normally wouldn't be on your list. I need to appreciate Tombstone a little bit more. I just get a little bit tired of everyone talking about Huckabee. You know what I mean?
Huckleberry.
I'll be your Huckleberry.
Yeah, it's also a movie that Huckabee. I think got out of the gates a little wrong. Like, I think people thought of it as almost like a Young Guns style, updated, cool, hip Western.
I don't know, maybe. Is that how you thought of it? I just remember reading.
No, I think it was positioned.
This is back when I was reading Variety and Hollywood Reporter religiously. Right. And I remember there's a lot of back and forth.
I'm much younger.
I learned that this episode, yes.
It's a discrepancy in our
list. All right, let's
hear the Lister top five. Let's
move on.
Right, tied for number five, we have Tom Mikowski from Office Space.
That's a great one. He's a people person.
What do you say you do here?
Also at number five is Half-Baked, Jim Brewer's character.
There you go.
Number four, we have Casino.
Yeah, great scene.
Casino.
Number three, I might take issue with number three. It's Fight Club. Edward Norton's character.
There's a number of those that I came across. There's a number of those they go in and they egg on the firing because they wanted to quit anyways. But they same with American Beauty.
But was he even fired at all? Like, I don't know.
I believe the words were uttered. Like,
he was fired a number of times in that scene. But by the end, he got his way. Right. Same thing with American Beauty. I came across a number of those, but they're not like technically firing. No.
That's another trope is sort of egging on the begging the firing.
Well, number three is Fight Club, if we count it. Number two.
I count it.
It's a great scene, but for all other reasons. Him kicking the shit out of himself.
That was also one of the first ones I thought of.
Is a great scene. Less to do with the firing, more to do with the actual ass-kicking of himself.
That's the great part.
Are there enough scenes that happen with that? Because I know Jim Carrey does it, too.
He kicks
the shit out of himself in the
Liar Liar.
Yeah, in the bathroom there. I don't think there's enough of those.
Okay, self ass kicking scenes.
Yeah, I think there's two that we
can there's think literally of. Two. A lot of crossover in this list.
Number two, Back to the Future 2, Marty McFly.
Ah, what is that? I should have thought of that.
And of course, number one, as voted on by our listeners, is RoboCop.
RoboCop.
Fight Club is also ran for me. The Incredibles. I'm surprised it didn't make your list. There's a good firing scene there.
There is a great firing scene there. It's very sad.
Yep. Austin Powers, very badly burned. Batman, the original, the one with Michael Keaton, has a good one with Jack Nicholson where Bob Gunn, he takes the gun, he shoots him. That falls under the death by firing. Ghostbusters, of course. Glengarry Glen Ross, that whole scene with Alec Baldwin is a firing.
But no one gets fired.
Scene.
It's a threat.
I know, it's a threat. Yeah. Well, he does say,
you're all fired.
You're all fired.
You can get your jobs back, though, by the end of the week. So how are they going to get their jobs back? By continuing to work because they're not actually fired.
The aforementioned American Beauty, speaking of J.K. Simmons, La La Land, where he fires Gosling for not playing the set list. And, of course, an underrated one that maybe could have made the list if there were not as many good ones, Mr. Mom. Mr. Mom has a good firing scene.
There is a good firing scene in that. Didn't think of that at all.
The very beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got 1 hour photo, and it's. I remember it. I don't think of that movie much, but that scene, it's an odd movie, 1 hour photo. And I was really hoping to find a clip. It probably would have made my list, to be honest, if I could have found a clip of Robin Williams getting fired in 1 hour photo. Such an odd film. No one really talks about it. It's one of those rare occurrences where the movie is probably way better than the script because there's just not much going on. And it's about this guy that works at a 1 hour photo place. He becomes enamored and obsessed with his family in a creepy way. Yeah. But he's actually kind of an innocent guy. He's just lonely. It's weird. It's creepy. The whole thing's creepy. There's really not any payoff. But when he does get let go, I just remember crying in the theater watching this poor man where his job was everything and getting let go. And what's funny is that the actor that played Lumberg is actually his boss.
Gary Cole.
But that was before, I believe, Office Space. I could be wrong on that. Anyways, 1 hour photo. I would have liked to have it on the list. Social Network, great firing scene there.
Yep.
With fire and Andrew Garfield.
But is
stomach.
He fired? He leaves. He's like, get a lawyer.
No, dude. He's like, he was taking off the masthead and everything.
His shares reduced. But he was.
But they're edging him out, getting him out.
Structurally, it fits.
Office Space, of course, up in the air, of course. Kramer versus Kramer, a pretty good, shame on you, pretty good scene there in the restaurant. cost him his kids. Boogie Nights, of course, Network. I know you don't like the Network, but there's a great firing scene there. True Lies, it's not really a firing scene. It's just a fucking line. Brad in Fast Times at Richmond High, he gets fired.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty good.
At the burger place.
Yeah, that's a good firing scene. Not a bad firing scene.
God, I forget what was he saying on his way out. Like, oh, he says,
hope you had a nice piss.
Something. Oh, yeah, he says, pardon my French, you can kiss mom my ass or something like that.
Nope, don't recall that. Mm. And finally, The Help. I hate that scene, but I reference it all the time. Mm. And when they fired their long, essentially modern-day slave, and the older woman, remember, and she's in front of her white friends, and she makes her go outside because her daughter had the gall, Brian, to come in while they were having dinner or tea or whatever
the
fuck it was.
You can't do that.
And they put her out, and the overacting that they had that poor older black woman do with the eyes to look like a puppy.
Ugh.
Almost put it on the list just
really?
Because it stands out.
It's iconic, I suppose, a little bit.
It's not iconic.
Well, it's memorable. You're right. I don't like that movie.
The Help. Why don't you like The Help?
I don't like The Help.
It goes down smooth.
No, don't.
It is what it is.
No, it's
it goes
saccharine.
Down
you choke
smooth.
On the saccharin.
Nah, no, that...
It's precious.
There's some great fucking performances in there by some.
Yeah, you're right.
Some actresses that otherwise, I don't know if I would remember. Bryce is fantastic, and Chastain is awesome. And I think it was the first time that we got to see Octavia.
Once you almost Oscar. Once again praised all the white actors in a movie about black people first.
Oh no! Thank God, Octavia Spencer.
But Octavia, she's the one.
You keep saying it.
The one that you think of the most with that
she's
movie.
She's by far the best. Yeah,
like we do 5-1 here. I was saving right. her for last.
That's good.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's gamble and get out of here.
You know how many tweets I've gotten saying that the best part, no, the best part, people's favorite part of Black Panther is Andy Serkis? I've gotten a number.
Time will not be kind to that comment.
Oh, of course it won't be. Kind of like my buddy Tyler. He got, no, I don't want to talk about
what
that.
What happened, Tyler?
He got let go a long time ago, and like what he got let go for at the time was so absurd, and it just seemed like who cares. But like in recent years now, like when
seems
you,
worse.
I'll tell you off okay. air, but it seems way worse now right. because culture's changed.
I'll tweet it later, guys. It'll be a pinned tweet.
All right. Last week you gambled on Tomb Raider. At the time, the Rotten Tomato score was 52%, and it was close with Anderson bidding 48 and Brian 40.
Shit.
The Rotten Tomato score for Tomb Raider has gone down, but not by enough. It's gone down to 50%, making Anderson the winner.
I like 50? That. 50? 48.
5-0.
No,
Anderson said 48.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Damn it.
So let me see here. Let me see.
Streak ends.
I got a good movie for you to watch, too.
Let me see here. I'm tired of musical documentaries, but thanks, Brad.
I got a couple. You feel like I didn't say one? Couple? Couple?
Damn. Couple. I thought I had more.
Come on, bro.
I thought I had more than this. All right, you know what? Hmm. And this is not a trend that's going to stick, all right? But I'm giving you a choice.
Okay.
What do you feel like? You feel like whimsical or punk rock?
I'd like something I've seen before. Well, can I hear the
whimsical
the
or punk? No, I'm just giving you hints. Whimsical or punk rock? What do you feel?
Are they both old?
Nope.
I mean,
what do you feel? New or old?
Are they in theaters?
No.
Okay.
No, Brian. There's nothing in theaters right now. That's why I didn't feel bad about not getting to the theater this week for the. I looked in the theaters long and hard. Nothing.
Probably, I'm going to say whimsical.
Ghost Story. Let's do it.
It's a long time coming.
I want to see what kind of a person you are.
Okay.
Let's watch Ghost Story. Hey, and keep the
Ghost Story
emails.
Will be seen by me.
Keep the emails coming. I'm really appreciating and liking these emails that I'm getting from listeners about their reaction to Ghost Story. A number of them gave up on the pie eating scene and have since gone back to watch and love. A number of them.
Well, I'll let you know. I'll be the final word.
Brian will be the final
word. I'll weigh in and that'll be the final
word. I'm not sure what I want from this, but either way, I'm going to be able to find some kind of silver lining, okay. I'm sure.
All right, this week you're gambling on Pacific Rim Uprising.
Oh, no. I'm going to gamble that Logan is going to give it 101%.
It's not Guillermo, though.
Is it giant ass-kicking robots fighting giant ass-kicking monsters?
Oh, so you're on the same page as me, then.
That's what I'm saying. Hold on, shit. Oh, I feel strong about this.
I don't have anyone really to go good. See this with. Anyone want to see it with me?
Are you just saying this to the listeners or us?
Absolutely not.
Anderson? What's your number?
50.
58. 58.
All right. Well, currently, the week before its release,
that's too high.
63 reviews.
Way too high. I was going to edge lower, but I went off of Tomb Raider, and it feels similar.
I said 48, actually, is what I said. So
the Rotten Tomatoes score is 95, and I'm kidding.
Jesus.
48%.
Damn it.
Damn it. I did 48 last week. Finally.
That's going to go up. God damn. I should have said 48.
You need to do something really dicky in between now and next week, because I got some fucking harrowing films on my list for you.
I don't want to see any of those.
So why don't you upset me in between now and next week?
God damn. The really upsetting part is I have a really good movie I want you to see.
What is it? Maybe I'll just watch it.
Maybe just watch it.
Like if we did top five or, you know, or the Vaulties, and you had a top 10. I got a few emails from people too letting me know that they think it's absurd that you don't have top 10 at the end of the year.
Why? Is it top five? We do top five every
I do
week.
Top 10 every single year, though. It's worth top 10. Look, you should see his
I'm
face.
I'm a purist.
What's that?
That's because you cheat.
It's cheating.
Don't cheat. You come up with a top 10 at the
five.
End of the year.
Top five.
You should stop accepting emails from listeners.
Oh, not just emails.
Confirmation
Send
bias.
Tweets to no, Brian and
it,
let him know that.
Your confirmation bias.
Like, no, I dude, I'm not fucking retarded. I understand. I shouldn't say retarded, but I'm not mentally challenged. I understand what you're saying. I absolutely do. But when we come to the end of the year and it's the big, most important episode of our little show each year, and we see all these movies, why not do a top 10? Why not do 10? I do 10 for the last number of years. It just seems, I think you're just afraid of going off of your script. Because
possibly, maybe I just don't see that many movies.
I guess that's
far from the truth.
If we both just had top 10 next year, it'd be nice, you know?
All right, well, I'll think about it, but...
Listener, a couple listeners.
I'm not going to think that hard about it.
I feel like everyone should tweet, bro. Actually,
I'm done thinking about it. No.
Next year, let's tweet them.
No. Next year. Oh, boy. Yeah. If I told you what movie it was, would you watch it? I have to sign.
No, what I was getting at with that before that little mini rant was, if we did The Vaulties and your number one was a movie that I'd never heard you talk about before, if it wasn't Get Out and I hadn't seen it and you're going on and on about it for a few weeks and it was streaming, I'd watch it to let you know. Mm. I'd come in here. But you're like, I'm not going to watch it until you assign it to me.
But did you assign to me?
I just did.
That's right. So we're good.
I feel like I want to take it back now.
Go to AndersonAndBrian.com to see the fan art. It is by Scott W. this week. Thanks, Scott W. For sending in your fan art. That's good. That's real strong.
I don't like it.
That's actually my favorite one of all time. Wow.
Brian's getting too messy.
I really am. That's excellent. Wow. The rare, flattering fan art. Thank you. Like you know, it. I take a little bit of abuse in the fan art. I'm a good sport about it, but it's finally is a flattering one.
Kind of boring.
That's really good. Thanks, Scott W. I appreciate that. Go over to AndersonAndBrian.com to see that. Go over there to see our featured artists. They are Before Dawn, Take Today, The Sanderlings, The Shakers, Good Talk Russ, and Kristen Nelson. Thank you guys, for being our featured artists this week. And yes, subscribe on Patreon, you guys. TV Vault Part 2 is up now. The dramas, the top five. Oh, you had one you wanted to add.
What's that?
A drama.
Oh, yeah, we're not doing that till Patreon. I'll do it on the Patreon.
Okay, so. I got you. Click the Amazon banner. The Amazon banner is up and live, so go ahead and do your Amazon shopping over there. The Film Vault on Facebook and Twitter. And until next time,
we do it for Van Gogh.